Hey guys, it's day four of the pledge drive. If you can, please go to patreon.com, go to the Psychology in Seattle Patreon page and become a patron of our podcast. So many P words. Also, we have some votes in for the different charity that we might give to, the charity we might identify as the charity that we give to as a part of this pledge drive. Again, to review the votes or things I voted for and some of the new votes, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, Mental Health America, NAMI, which I still have not looked up. I'm pretty sure it's National Association of Mental Illness. NAMI. National Alliance on Mental Illness. That makes more sense. The Trevor Project, the Union Gospel Mission here in Seattle. And someone voted for the World Horse Organization, the World Health Organization, which I didn't actually know this, but I think they have a mental health component, the World Health Organization. It's just me today. This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I am chair of the Couple and Family Therapy Program, and I thought I would read some emails. All right, let's go to... Oh, and a little update on the patrons of our Patreon page. I think we have six patrons so far, day four, six patrons, which is great. Thank you so much. Let me give a shout out to our patrons. We got patron Slobodan, patron Ryan, patron Lyndon, patron Thomas, patron Anita, and patron Scott. So if you could go again to patreon.com, become a patron of the podcast, that would be great. Patron Ryan actually writes in, I believe this is, Patron Ryan. He says, I love seeing your videos on my YouTube feed. Let me chime in here. It's always interesting that people will actually listen to the podcast purely on YouTube, because I don't know if you know this, but I also will upload the audio onto YouTube. Anyway, Patron Ryan says, I love your videos on my YouTube feed, and I'm looking forward to potentially seeing them more frequently. I'd love to financially support this podcast with what I can give. Because you asked in last night's video, the Trevor Project would be my charity of choice, simply because of the incredible work they have done so far. I agree, Ryan. Ryan goes on to say, also, I was uplifted after listening to the sports fan depression video. It was hard to see Green Bay beat the Seahawks, and I was bummed out until I saw the new podcast. This new perspective changes everything that I see in sports. That is why I love this channel. Psychology in Seattle is changing my life. Thank you. Wow. Well, that is very nice of you to say, Ryan. I'm glad that you enjoy the podcast. Yeah, I posted the episode just before the Green Bay Seattle game, and then I proceeded to watch the game, and we started not so good, and I prepared myself for a loss, and then the Seahawks came back, which they always seem to do later on in the game, and it looked like we were going to win, and then Green Bay came back, and we lost. And you know, like I was saying yesterday, it's tempting to get all angry, especially when you read news articles or when you listen to sports podcasts. There's a lot of blame going on, you know, if Cam Chancellor was in or if Coach Carroll had, you know, done this or if this guy hadn't gone off sides and da 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 da. And the whole thing is like I was saying yesterday, I wasn't really saying this directly, but I'll say it directly, which is it's a game and two teams come out and try their best. And you should enjoy yourself. And you should absolutely expect it to go either direction. If they win, you should be happy. And if they lose, of course, that's not great. But of course, you should be able to celebrate what's happening and have a good time with it. To me, when I see the opposing team, like Green Bay, make a good play, of which they made a number of great plays, I celebrate that. I think, wow, that was a great catch. And when the Seahawks, like when Luke Wilson caught that behind the back catch, I thought, holy mackerel, that was a good play. That's what makes the game exciting, and that's what makes it meaningful to me. And if I'm going to, you know, complain and moan and look for someone to blame every time a team I enjoy loses, you know, that's just going to make my life miserable. And I'm not going to do that. And the team doesn't do that. You know, it's like the fans are the most negative people when it comes to sports. You know, I highly doubt that the coach and the players are going home going, oh man, if only so-and-so hadn't gone off sides, or, oh man, you know, we would have won if only blah, blah, blah. You know, they know as better than anyone that things can go various different ways. And every play, you're trying your hardest. And football is an extremely complicated sport. And these pro guys make it look like, you know, just child's play when it is not. It's very complicated. And so, you know, just appreciate that we actually have a team that can even compete in these sorts of things. Because, you know, the other thing is the Seahawks actually came around in the 70s. They were a new franchise that came about in the late 70s or mid 70s, 76, 77. And I was alive then. And, you know, the Seahawks, for the entire franchise, you know, they've been off and on, mostly off. So get ready, Seahawks fans, or whatever fan of team you are, because in all likelihood, whatever team you enjoy, there's going to be some bad years, or at least there's going to be some bad games. And, you know, just cope and find a way to enjoy it. Because if you're spending, you know, this actually reminds me of when I started playing golf. I got into golf a number of years back, and the first few times I played, I was really bad, but I had this great time, you know, with my friends out in the sun, a summer day, and you're joking around and you're hitting balls. And if you've ever golfed before, you know this. Nice golf courses are like really, really nice outdoor parks where there's no one around. I mean, you when you're on a typical day, when you're on a nice golf course, you won't see any other human being around, and you'll be in a huge meadow or a forest or overlooking a lake or a river or a trail or a, you know, you're in this amazing nature, and you're playing this simple little game, hitting this like little white ball, and it's serene and it's quiet and it's just a wonderful, and you're bonding with people, and it's just it's a really great game, and if you enjoy golf, you know what I'm talking about. Well, as I started to get a little better, I started going, hey, I'm getting better at my score is going down. And then I found myself, every time I would play, I would be in a bad mood. Even though I was playing better, much better than I had, you know, the previous couple of years, my score was getting better, but I was actually in a worse mood. When I first started playing, it was always fun, even though I was shooting like a 130 or 120 or something. As my score got better, I started getting more and more angry, because what would happen was I would have a good day, and then I would be like, well, damn straight, I should be shooting that, you know. I'd have a bad day, and I would just, my mood would just plummet. And after a couple years of that, I said, what am I doing with my life here? I'm spending like 6-7 hours, because, you know, by the time you get there and, you know, you do the whole 18 and da-da-da, you know, it's a number, it's your whole day. And if I'm doing this thing that's supposed to be fun and I'm feeling terrible about myself, then why am I doing it? And I tried to adjust my attitude, and I tried to adjust my swing, and in the end, nothing really worked. And I decided, you know what? That's it for me in golf. Because if I can't enjoy this, then I'd rather be spending my time doing something else. And the same goes for sports, people. This is just my advice to you, is if you can't enjoy it, win or lose, then something's wrong with your recreational activities. So that's just my advice to you. Now, some people will say, and I've actually heard this today, some people will say, well, if you're not into it, if you're not getting riled up, then you aren't a true fan, or you don't care as much about it as real fans do. And I say, that is frickin' horse manure. Excuse my French. Why do we say excuse my French? It's not French at all. It's actually totally English. Horse manure. Well, manure sounds a little Frenchy. But anyway, that's crap. That's utter crap. You know, how do you define what's a real fan or not? You know, plus, if you're looking at me, I've been a fan since, and I played football, you know, I played on the field just before the Seahawks played in the Kingdom. It doesn't get any more hometown than that. Kingdom doesn't even exist anymore. And I played on the field as a child, as an exhibition match, you know, before the Seahawks actually played, and we got to sit, you know, on the sidelines, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so if you're going to call me a non-fan, screw you. You probably weren't even born in Washington, so suck it. Don't you just love having imaginary arguments with people, and, you know, and you just get to win because they can't speak back? Anyway, moving on to another email here. We have, again, remind you, please go to our Patreon page and become a patron. The whole idea is we want to take this podcast to the next level. I'm doing daily podcasts as a way of trying to get the ball rolling, get you to go to your computer and actually go through that step. You know, like I imagine you're in your car most of the time and you're not near your computer. So please remember, go to your computer, log in, or, you know, create an account on patreon.com and become a patron of our podcast. I'm starting to actually, I really don't know exactly what sort of benefits the patrons are going to get, but like for instance, today I'm reading only emails from patrons, by the way. So that's one thing, is like, okay, I'm only going to read emails if you're a patron, or you're going to get, and or you're going to get extra episodes, or you'll get every other episode if you're a patron, or you'll be invited to our live shows, or, you know, just various different goodies. Because again, I don't know if I've said this before, but my favorite podcasts are ones that feel like a community, and I want to create that. Because we are a community, but no one knows they're a community because I am in contact with all these people, but I want you to kind of start connecting and start to become kind of our little Psychology in Seattle family or something. I don't know. It's just a dream. If it doesn't work out, it's cool. I can take defeat. Like I was saying yesterday, you know, because I was on a football team that lost most of the time, I learned how to lose gracefully. All right. So going on to email from Patron Linden. Patron Linden says, I'm a bit addicted to the podcast now, and I'm also a patron. I was trying to think of the name of a phenomenon, but the best I could come up with was passive aggression. But I know that it is not correct because this is not a passive phenomenon. Let me give you some examples here. So Patron Linden gives the following examples that are from his life. A colleague at work reminds you of a task you already are aware of as though you had forgotten or were unaware of it. A colleague at work reminds you of a task you are already aware of as though you had forgotten or were unaware of. I think I'm getting the picture on this one. Another one. A colleague at work makes a passing comment about some mistake you made and seems to enjoy this. Another example. A colleague makes a joke that hurts your feelings or points to a flaw and then laughs as though it was a mutual transaction. And the final example Patron Linden gives here is, a colleague offers to do a task that is your responsibility and take work away from you. So going on with email. In short, these all strike me as subtle forms of undermining, combining with faux affability so that you cannot point out to them what they are doing. I don't know what to call this, maybe covert hostility or something like that. It has happened to me quite a few times with two different people I work with, and I honestly could not figure out how to respond. I suppose the real crux I am getting at here is the bind where the person is able to attack or undermine you, but also by acting in an implicit rather than explicit way, fend off your attempt to clear your name, defend yourself, or call them out. Yeah, I think I know what this is. I think this sort of behavior is perpetrated by various different personality profiles. But if I was to take a guess as to the sort of personality of a person that would do this, and if I was to comment on it, it would be the following. The general guideline or principle about personality and behavior interpersonally that I like to follow when I'm confused by other people's behavior is that people tend to make other people feel the way that they feel inside. So if on the inside you feel like a piece of crap, then unless you have a way of coping and a certain amount of differentiation, then you're going to tend to make other people feel the same way. Psychoanalysis and psychodynamic people have a lot of theories about that. Projective identification, these kinds of defenses, you know, in a nutshell, essentially when you have an internal conflict, like an inner voice that, internalized voice that you are a piece of crap, and then another side of you that is trying to defend against that and saying, no, I'm not a piece of crap, and another part of you is saying, yes, you are, you're nothing, nobody likes you, you're stupid, everyone notices, and the other part of you is like, no, it can't be, people like me. Well, if you have that inner conflict going on, and again, it's unconscious, usually, then the ego has a fantasy that if it makes this internal conflict external, then the conflict no longer exists. When in fact, of course, the conflict still exists because you can't actually make an internal conflict external to get rid of it. it just distracts you, or it just creates a fantasy that it no longer exists inside of you. And so a way of making an internal conflict external is by inducing other people to feel one half of your dyad that you are conflicting on the inside. So anyway, I could go on and on about that. But if we looked at this, let's see, one example really, see. The first one is a great example. A colleague at work reminds you of a task you are already aware of, as though you had forgotten or were unaware of it. And I've certainly experienced this before, and it's really insulting, you know. So, you know, you're planning on, or there's a deadline on Friday that something's due. And you know that, and you're responsible, and you normally are good about meeting your deadlines. And you're in a meeting, and all your colleagues are there, and your boss is there, and your boss's boss is there. And someone in the middle of the meeting, you know, while they're talking about various things, you know, turns to you and says, and remember, the deadline is due on Friday, so we really need that thing done by Friday, looking at you, you know, as if to remind you that it's, you know, something's due on Friday. Well, the implication that is made to everyone in the room now is that you are bad with deadlines, you know, that you need to be reminded about deadlines or something, right? And now, if the person was not trying to induce you to feel a certain way, to feel defensive or hurt or insulted, then they would temper it with, I know you already know this because I know you're responsible, but I just want to remind you because I'm a little anxious. The deadline is on Friday. You know that, I know, but I just want to remind you and everyone because I'm a little worried about this project, you know. So that's not really a great example, but there's various different ways of communicating that same thing to someone without, to some extent, manipulating the person to feeling bad about themselves. So in general, and again, everyone's different, and maybe it's just a mistake that the person is doing, but if it's a consistent pattern, then in all likelihood, the person on the inside feels really bad about themselves. They feel irresponsible. They feel worthless. And I hate to be cliche here, but in all likelihood, they had parents that said such things to them that they weren't good enough in some way. And they are still struggling with that. They have yet to go to therapy about it. They've yet to even become aware of their tendency to externalize this internal conflict. And so they will really, really look for opportunities in which they can make other people feel the feeling that they feel on the inside, again, as a fantasy of trying to get rid of it. And so they will insert it where it doesn't make any sense. You know, if you actually were bad with deadlines, then they would really start hammering you because then you're a really excellent candidate to externalize their inner problems. But without a good candidate for this sort of projection, then they will just force it in and they will figure out a way to make other people feel these feelings for them. So patron Lyndon asks, I don't know what to call this, maybe covert hostility. You can call it whatever you want. It's actually kind of the nice thing about my field of psychodynamic or interpersonal therapy is that there are so many words and so many authors and so many coined terms that you can really come up with whatever term you want. It doesn't really matter. The point is what do you mean by it? Basically, patron Lyndon, you're trying to come up with a term that you understand that encapsulates this experience that you're having. I would call it projective identification. I might also call it someone who feels bad about themselves and is trying to cope with that by projecting it and inducing other people to feel the feeling for them. It's a very long way of putting it, but that's how I would describe it potentially. And again, I'm talking in generalities. I don't know these people that you work with. I don't know their personalities, but in general, that's generally how I like to at least begin the analysis of people like this. The same goes when you're on the road and you're trying to get over on the freeway and the person in the car next to you could easily just let you in. You know, there's no big deal. And they totally see you. You know, there's really no question that they can see you and that they know you're trying to get over. Well, why don't they let you over? You know, why would they make you feel so angry? And why would they make you feel so frustrated? And why would they literally put lives in danger, in their own included, in order to not let you over. You know, why would they do that? Well, it's because all of us, and all of us have done this, by the way. I mean, we've all, you know, you got to admit it, unless you're, I don't know, Gandhi or something. My guess is you've done it yourself. And so why would we do that? And why would other people do that to us? Well, it's because we all have issues, is the short answer. And we've all been wronged, and we've all been told that we're terrible people, and we've all been told, or we've all been given the message that we're not good enough. And we want to assert that we are good enough, and that this is ours. This is my lane, and you can't get over. I've let too many people walk on me in this world to let one more person walk on me. I draw the line here. You are not getting over in my lane. I'm in my car and I'm a powerful person and you can't trounce on me is basically the way that I see people that do that. And you will see perfectly rational, nice people completely lose their shit around this sort of thing. And again, the reason why that I find to be true when I actually look into it is because people, like I said, we all have our hurts and our angers and our frustrations. And the road, being on the road, is a very good place to expel some of that energy. Another great place to expel that energy is with reality TV. You know, we watch other people and their foibles, and we judge and we criticize and we think, oh boy, what an idiot. And it's one of the reasons why I actually don't watch reality TV anymore. Not that I'm above anybody by any means. I'm certainly a fan of like mindless activities. You know, I still play Candy Crush, for crying out loud. I mean, talk about mindless activity. There's this new one called like Soda something. I don't even know what it's called. I play it like when I'm in the bathroom. I won't go into detail, but Candy Crush. Anyway, so I totally am a big fan of mindless activities. But when I watch reality TV, I find myself really getting into this negative headspace where I'm really judging the people on the screen, and I find that repetitively judging people is not a very good practice for me. I don't think it's a good practice really for anybody. And because I think that if you repetitively criticize and think about how stupid someone is, then I think you tend to generalize that to the rest of the world. Now, I don't have any research on that. Maybe it's the opposite. Maybe you can get all your critical jollies out on reality TV. So anyway, I encourage you all to think about your practice and how it affects you in that way. Can we get to one more email? Sure, let's get to one more email here. So we have listener Samantha. She says, I'm still loving your podcasts and listen to them religiously. I'm planning to make a donation soon, but unfortunately, being a full-time grad student, living off loans in a big city doesn't pay much or at all. Anyways, since you said you're looking to post more frequently, I had a couple of topic requests I thought I'd pass along to see if you could look into. So there's three different topics here that Samantha gives. First one is engaging men in therapy. She goes on to say, in my internship site, I actually have a majority of male clients, and I am looking for a little help in navigating the therapeutic relationship as a woman with male clients. But beyond that, I believe my father is really struggling with depression and anxiety, and he absolutely refuses to get help because he believes it will make him weak and that it's for girls. Therapy's for girls. I know you did a topic about men's shame, but I'd be very interested in a general episode on how to engage men in therapy, ranging from getting them into the first session and beyond. I think her questions are actually much longer for this podcast, so I will answer that question tomorrow. How about that for a teaser? Again, go to patreon.com, please, and become a patron of the podcast. We have 6 patrons so far on day 4. It's really, really, really wonderful for those 6 people to have become patrons. It's great to actually see people, putting that effort in. It really, really means a lot to us. Like I said, we're trying to take this podcast to the next level. We want to make it more relevant. I'm kind of having fun doing this every day, actually. I can't sustain this, I don't think. But, you know, maybe if enough people became patrons, maybe we Berto and I and Paulette would do podcasts every day. You know, I kind of like talking about things that are happening in the news today and da-da-da and responding to your emails right away and that sort of thing. And so, I don't know. Maybe if definitely if we get enough patrons, the more frequent podcast thing, if that's what the patrons want, will definitely be an option. All right. Well, that does it for another episode of Psychology in Seattle. Thanks for joining me, and please take care of yourself because you deserve it.